I was just
Netflix reaction. Well, that's cool.
Furniture. Didn't make me feel like I was too wanted. And I got into drugs. Drugs just made it easier to bear some of those emotional traumas. It started off with, let's say, the usual drugs like marijuana. But I didn't have to go too much longer and get really involved with needles and amphetamines. I was just throwing out difficult until 20 years old. After that, I was a little bit more involved in the criminal side of life and never took advantage of the surroundings and of the life we've been given and do something with it. I put a needle in my arm. That's what I did with it. That period of my life went from bad to worse. I was a dope fiend. I wasn't working. We had no plans of working. I was burglarizing drugstores at night and selling the proceeds to people in Spokane. There's nothing violent about it. I was a delinquent, if you will. That was my activities. That should have provided the necessary income, but it didn't. I was using too many of the drugs. I knew one thing, I had to pay the rent. I had to be able to pay for food. A wife and three kids can't be, we can't be living materially. No income. I just knew I had to do something I hadn't done before. So I went out that morning, drove around Western Montana looking for a store that looked comfortable. One could use that word. I robbed the drugstore there. I didn't think I did a good job, so I raced out of town. I get out back on 93 and a police car tries to pull me over. I've just been out of prison for a couple months at that point. And instead of submitting to that arrest, I drove my car into a parking lot in a small convenience store. And I ran into the store. I was looking for a shield. I don't know how I came up with these thoughts. I've never done this kind of thing before. I came through the door and I saw a movement off the corner of my eye. And I knew that whoever was making that shadow in the corner of my eye was going to be my shield, so I fired a gun in that direction. And then I pushed my gun on the back of the head of a smaller, what turned out to be a 13-year-old boy. get the boys' father's pickup truck. Yeah, it's a police procession pretty much following us to the airport. I was trying to escape, and I've been trying to escape for hours. The sheriff agreed to provide me with a plane and a pilot in exchange for the tip. And I thought if I got the plane and the plane took off, that the pilot would take me over the Rocky Mountains. I would have let the pilot free, and I would have gone on my merry way. Yeah, my merry way. No more wife, no more kids. All that stuff had been going through my head. At the airport, there was police cars all around the airplane. They backed off 100 yards or so. The pilot was there on the ground of the plane. I had no intention of killing that first hostage, the child. I'd been thinking that as soon as I let go of the kid, I'm going to be shot and my life is going to be over. Well, for some reason, that didn't happen. Once we got the plane, I had my gun on the pilot. A new hostage, and I was hopeful that maybe I would actually live through this night, that nobody would get shot. Pilot takes about a half an hour trying to start the plane, but while this was going on, unbeknownst to me, other sheriff's deputies were underneath the plane, letting the air out of the tires. That plane wasn't going to go anywhere. The negotiating process had me leaning out the doorway of the plane, talking to the sheriff. And one time when I leaned out, the sniper was perhaps 50 yards away, thought he had a clear shot at me. So he shot me. I'd been severely wounded. I could tell that this wasn't going well. I was going to be dead pretty quick. My life was going to be over. I thought to myself, I'll shoot the pilot because I don't want to go alone tonight. I didn't want the loneliness just... It wasn't a well-thought-out spiritual or anything concept. Just, I didn't want to go alone. After I shot the pilot, I put down my gun and started backing out of the plane. And that was my last conscious memory. I believe I got shot at the doorway of the aircraft when I got out. I was shot point blank in the back of the head. Most people don't live with a shot in the back of the head. Here I am 38 years later. And I can laugh about this. I'm sick. I regret him with every ounce of my body. It may not sound like there's much regret. It may. Believe me, there is. I didn't wake up that morning thinking that I would go out and kill somebody that day. I wish I would have stopped it simply as if, but no. There was the feeling chip was not activated like Delta on Star Trek. Jesus. I wish I would have cared. Emotions had definitely been a part of my adult life, and they weren't really a part of it then. I don't like looking too deeply at myself. I shouldn't say I don't like it, I just don't usually do it. There's not much to like there. There's nothing right about it. Well, that's really not true. What was really right about it was the pilot volunteering for that job. Take the place of that child. That was about the only right thing that happened that day. If I could fake up tears right now, I would. But I can't. I miss my father. It's almost funny to say after 38 years. Whenever you lose your parents, you miss them. You know, at whatever age. I'm George Stryock. I'm the son of Harry Lee Stryock. The long-term effects of what happened to his death, we're very hard for all of us, for all our family, my grandchildren, his grandchildren, our children. They missed him. You know, we knew him. We still know who he was. They don't. I wish my boys would have had his influence. So that's a regret. My father came from a humble background in Ohio. He had always, growing up, had visions almost Peter Pan-like of flying. And so when he was 20, he joined the Air Corps Cadet Program. My father spent 30 years in the military, in three theaters of combat, in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. But he retired at 51. Of course, he was decorated for seeing a lot of combat. He's really a good pilot.
he left this note on the counter because my mom wasn't home. She went by D and he went by Lee. Hostage situation south of town. Have to fly the sheriff down and look it over. Lee. Experienced a lot of anger for a few years. My wife thinks I'm still really angry. I can't say that I'm really angry. I'm neutral. But it's just, Keith has to deal with himself and his maker in his own way. He's obviously highly intelligent. He could have made moral and ethical decisions when he came to age. And as far as his remorse, is difficult for me to believe, given his history. Keith was hell bent. This didn't happen just that day. It was a 10-year collision path and testament.
It's an individual decision to forgive one person for their acts. Some people can't forgive, and some people is a way to cleansing the soul. My brother is a result of his childhood. He wouldn't be what he is today without his childhood setting him on that path. My name is Bruce Keith, and I'm the older brother of David Keith. When I saw him in the hospital with the tubes and the wires and the screens with the heartbeat on, it's pretty daunting to look at when it's, you know, a close relative, certainly. And you might see it on TV once in a while, but when it's in your real life, right in your face, it's difficult. Nobody knew if he was really going to live or die. I mean, he was on a life support system. And then the next thing I heard was, he's got a trial date. Because you don't try somebody that's rehabbing from trauma. You have to wait till they can defend themselves a bit. He had a lot of pressure on him to show up before a judge after this horrific thing and face the music. Stood up in court and pled guilty to his charges, I understood why he did that. As part of taking responsibility. Sitting in the courtroom and listening to the judge pronounce sentence, I remember the words of the judge quite distinctly. He said, "Son, you've really broke the bank on this one." How many people have ever heard of two death penalties getting handed out in the same courtroom. I think Dave's punishment, as handed down by the judge, was not the right thing. I don't think killing anybody is a worthwhile endeavor. I don't think the process took for years. You certainly know you'll never see him again except behind bars. He chose the guilty path because he knew he did it, so he's being honest with himself and with the court. He'll never not be sorry for it. He understands that he brought it all on himself. He understands he's paid a heavy price for his actions. So, is he a danger to society? I hardly think so. I would really like to see him released and thrive, if it's possible.
Say the Irish don't see black and white because they see all the colors in between. That's my problem. I see all the colors in between in a story like this. My name is Jim Manley. I'm the district court judge for the 20th Judicial District, which is the jurisdiction in which this case was handled. David Cameron Keith was sentenced to death in this courtroom at that table over there. When the sentence was announced, I don't remember him uttering any sounds or making any scene or showing much emotion. Through every step of the procedure, he sat here and was stoic, and you would have never guessed is got this serious a sentence hanging over his head. It's almost unheard of for somebody to plead guilty if they know that the death penalty is on the table, unless they want to die. So it was surprising, but on the other hand, he had no defenses. The homicide crimes did meet the criteria for the death penalty. As long as human society has existed, there's been a need for retribution, and I understand that part of it. On the other hand, the existence of the death penalty doesn't really reduce homicides. However, if I have to follow the letter and the spirit of the law as the legislature hands it down, I very well might sentence him to the death penalty today, even though personally I'm not really in favor of it. Governor Schwinden studied the file, talked to everybody involved, went over to the prison, sat down eye to eye with him, and talked to him for some time. And at that time, it's my understanding, David Cameron Keith had become a Christian and was going around talking to high school groups about crimes and drugs, and convinced the governor that he was remorseful. The governor weighed all of that and commuted his death sentence to life in prison without possibility of parole. First time I ever remember a Montana governor commuting a death sentence like that. It's my understanding David Cameron Keith has presented a number of faces to different people over a period of time. I don't know which is the real David Cameron Keith. But if he is indeed sincere and remorseful about what he did, and if the victim's family is consulted, I wouldn't object to him being released on parole at this point.
I think about Dad.